Hello, and welcome to The Raw Bar. I'm Goddess Cecilia, pleasure educator and consultant, and I will be your host. I've invited my friends and colleagues to sit, snack, get real, and probably a little salty about sexuality and pleasure. We've also saved a seat for you. And because of the nature of this podcast, we want to make sure that you're aware that there will be conversations about sexuality, sexual acts, probably some spicy language, and a bunch of other things that are definitely not appropriate for younger ears. So give yourself some solo time if you can. Grab a drink like tea, wine, water, or boba. Don't forget your snackies. Ease in and get comfy. Here's to a pleasurable time together. This season of Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia is brought to you by MysteryPleasureBox.com. Surprise yourself with a subscription to MysteryPleasureBox.com, a fun and affordable way to discover new sex toys and novelty products every month, billed and delivered discreetly. You get an arsenal of potions, lotions, sex toys, and bedroom accessories picked by industry experts. Every box you receive is packed with high-quality, full-size, brand-name products from brands you know and love. So sign up at MysteryPleasureBox.com and use code GODDESS for 10% off your first box. Nicole, let me read your bio and let's get into it, shall we?
Great.
All right. So Nicole is a sex educator and founder of Pleasure Pie, a grassroots sexual justice organization based in Boston. Nicole is passionate about reimagining sex ed through zines. She aims to create honest, down-to-earth sex education that celebrates the beautiful diversity of gender and sexuality. You can find her on Instagram at Pleasure Pie. So yay. Let's see. I was trying to remember how we met. And I want to say that it was probably at a random event.
Oh, you know what? I remember. It was at, because it was memorable for me. It was at Partners in Sex Education Conference because you had a craft genital table.
And yes.
I was like, it was like one of my first conferences as like a professional sex educator. And I was like, didn't really know people and not super comfortable in a conference situation. And I was like, this person is making crafts and I can just go make crafts for free with them. And I was so psyched. And I was like, I made my like little felt velvet thing. And then I took photos of all the felt crafts that everybody else at the conference had made on your table. I was just like, this one's great. This one's great. This one's great. This one's great.
They were all great.
Yeah. And I was so happy. And yeah, definitely remembered you from that.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was it. Cause I was like, there were so many people that I feel like that was our first time meeting. So I was like, was that our first time meeting? Cause it also just feels like we've known each other for a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it has technically been a long time, but even longer there.
Yeah, that was several years ago. That would have been, that might have even potentially been before I started Pleasure Pie. I'm not sure.
Oh.
It would have been, I'm guessing, around like 2013, 2014.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Oh my gosh. So how, since that was like your first official sex ed conference as a sex educator, which like of all the conferences, I think it was such a great one. To have locally and also to be like a really good like primer for sex ed conferences in general. But what is your sex ed / sex positive origin story?
Yeah, so I personally was a born again Christian as a teenager and was like all about the sexual repression and just like trying to commit myself to purity fully, and but also had lots of sexual feelings and was super conflicted about how to deal with that. And I was getting almost no education around sex and really didn't even know what penis and vagina sex consisted of, what different sex acts were, or like what people were talking about until I was like in my late, until honestly, until I started having sex in my late teens. And yeah, just starting to have sex, having some pretty negative sexual experiences, both in terms of consent and in terms of just once I finally was like, I guess I'm going to do this, really, because I got pressured into it by my boyfriend at the time. I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, then I want to enjoy it. And I want to like do my best to have a good experience with it. And my body was just like, no, we are not going to enjoy this. And I was just so anxious during any sort of sexual interaction. And I really like just physically couldn't feel pleasure. And that lasted for, I don't know, it was like a gradual thing, but it lasted for at least a couple of years. And I did a ton of research, just trying to like learn about sex and trying to learn to how to talk about sex, how to talk about my body, what was going on with my body. Everything was just like, use more lube, relax. And I was like, I'm using so much forsaken lube. Can't be using any more lube. I don't think that's the answer right now. And doing my best to relax and still like, it's not working. So really spent like a couple years just reading a lot about sex online, and found Bitch Magazine had a blog on their website that had posts with the tag sex positive. And that was the first time I ever heard the phrase sex positive. And I clicked on the sex positive tag and read all the articles with that tag and was like, this is everything I needed to hear. And so then from there, just was Googling more about sex positivity and trying to find like those kinds of resources, reading a ton. And after doing that for a couple years, eventually I was like, I think I have some things that I want to add to this conversation. And so I ended up starting working as a sex educator with teens in the Boston area, and then realizing that I really was most interested in making, like writing, drawing, making educational materials, and so started making zines about sex and consent.
I love it. How did you know about zines before, make any zines before the sex ed stuff? Or was it like, hey, also, this kind of came about in the middle of, like, how did the zine stuff start?
I always think, like, with, like, nature versus nurture, I think of myself as someone that is just, like, by nature inclined to make zines specifically, because as a kid, I made what I thought were just, like, my own magazines, but I called them zines, not knowing that was a thing already, because I was like, oh, it's like magazine, except shortened and cute. And then like years later, I think it was in college that I actually heard of a zine being a thing. And a friend of mine ran the social justice group at my college and asked me to contribute something to this little zine she was making. And so I like got to be a part of that. And yeah, then it was still a few years later until I like actually got more and more familiar with zines and started making them myself.
I love that. That's so funny. It's always there. And then you get to combine like your love of zine making with the sex part.
Yeah. And I feel like they go so well together.
Yeah. And then Pleasure Pie, was that like, how did that kind of come to be? Or just one day, like, here we are.
So Pleasure Pie happened because I started making, really, it was, I was teaching sex ed workshops to teens, and I really wanted to have some kind of like super clear consent education material, because I was getting a lot of shit from my teens who were like, this, who I think in not in good faith arguments were like being like, this doesn't make sense. Like, how are you supposed to ask at every turn kind of things, such as like teenage boys, like kind of, what is that called? Heckling. And I was like, while I agree that the consent can be confusing and it is good to teach those things, I didn't feel necessarily like they were genuinely confused about the questions they were asking. But I still was like, I want to make basically like a flowchart of if this happens, then this, if this happens, then that, and if you do this, then this would be consensual, this would not be, and make it very clear. And so I started making that into a flowchart, and that became way too big and messy for one page. And so I realized that a choose your own adventure style book would make it so that each thing just had their own page, but it was essentially a flowchart. And so that became a zine about consent, which is called Choose Your Own Consensual Adventure. And I saw that a zine fest was happening in Boston, so I applied to table at the zine fest and got accepted. And that was before I even finished the zine. So I was like, oh my God, I really got to make this zine that I described as if it existed already. And so I had a table at the zine fest, and in the application they had said, is there a certain name that you table under? And I was like, oh, it'd be more fun to have a name than just like my own personal name. So I made up the name Pleasure Pie, just thinking, oh, like, it's general enough for me to not talk about more than just consent and maybe even more than just sex. And it also sounds really friendly and like approachable. So came up with that name, put like a little piece of paper that said that name on my table at the zine fest. And my zines were so well received at that zine fest. And it was like the most heartwarming, encouraging experience. Cause I was just like, wow, this stuff means so much to me. And to have people be like, I love this, this means something to me, I was like amazed by that experience. And a couple people at the zine fest asked, so what's Pleasure Pie? And I was like, well, it's just these zines. But then after I got that question a couple times, I was like, I guess it could be whatever I want it to be. It doesn't have to just be these zines. So I asked myself, like, what do I want to do with this? Is there anything else? And I was like, yeah, I want to host events. Like, I love planning events. So I planned a launch party and then planned a body positive undies party and a consent makeout party and like just started doing different events and discussions. And it really grew from there.
I love that. I love it because I feel like, and I feel like this is actually a thing that I hear with a lot of other sex educators too, is that like a lot of the time when we put ourselves out there, we find that so many people have the same kind of questions or the same sort of like experiences or the same sort of, there's just like a resonating. And I think a lot of it is because it's not really talked about. And so when people are being willing to be so open about it, then it's almost a shocker. Maybe not anymore, but I still think in some ways it is, like for many people, it's still very different to have someone who's so willing to talk about this stuff and to put it on paper.
Yeah, absolutely. I still have lots of people who are surprised by how I talk about sex openly, and there's still a lot of confusion about, does this mean that she wants to talk about sex in an explicit erotic way? And I'm like, no, that's not the same thing.
Yes.
Because I think people are not used to it and don't really know. It's okay, I'm defying the boundary that society puts sex, talking about sex at all as taboo. And then it's okay, then anything goes then. So yeah, just trying to be like, for the most part, trying to assume best intentions in that, but also be like, no, here are different boundaries that a person might have. These are mine.
And I kind of want to talk a little bit about one of the things that you organized, which was the Boston Sex Positive discussions. I imagine that was also like one of the things that you were like, I would love to do something like this. Like, let's fucking do it.
Yeah, absolutely. That was really at the beginning of Pleasure Pie, where I was like, I had started making these zines and started putting stuff online that I was doing as Pleasure Pie. And all these different people were coming out of the woodwork who were also passionate about sex education, about sex positivity, sexual rights, sexual justice. And I was like, where have all these people been? Like, I've been passionate about this for the past at least 2 years, and I haven't known anyone else that is like talking about this stuff. And so I was so excited to be connecting with people. And I just was like, I want to get all these people in a room together to all meet each other. That was really where I came from on that. And also just create a resource for people like me who didn't have those kinds of connections and wanted that type of community and support around like those values, and to have someone to talk those things over with and just share and learn and grow together.
Yeah, they were really, I remember them being something that I'd never seen before anywhere. Excuse me. Because it really was this like, oh my gosh, we're able to talk about this stuff in a really open and honest way and have really good discussions about it. And not everyone has to agree, and that's fine. And it was nice to see people out in the world too once in a while and be like, oh, we have a connection. And that's really great. Were there experiences that came out of that project, out of the sex positive discussion group, that surprised you in a way, that were like,
unexpected?
I'm trying to think. I just remember. So the first one that we had, it was the people who showed up were mostly people I knew, which made sense because I was, because it wasn't like Pleasure Pie had any sort of following or like email list or anything to get people there. Though I did make it a public event and tried to encourage people to come, and it was free to attend. But yeah, it was still majority, maybe all people that I knew and that were there, like in a way of being supportive of what I was interested in and or their own interest in being a part of it. But then like just getting to see people that I didn't know show up over time was so satisfying. And just like seeing that it was really coming together as a community that wasn't just like people who were there like from my own circles, because I really wanted it to be, it was important to me to have it be public and free and just like anyone that wants to be a part of it, there's no barrier to entry. Though on the flip side of that, one thing I definitely was surprised by was like the times where people came without the right intentions that were just like, I did go into it from a pretty naive perspective in my early 20s and didn't know what to expect. And yeah, people coming and just trying to look for somebody to hook up with and like being excited about talking about sex for those reasons, or like even one time having like a borderline stalkery situation. So those things were honestly like the most memorable things that were surprises, because I was like, oh God, how do I deal with this thing? I wanted to create this community that had no barriers to entry, but also having it be completely public and anybody can just walk in the door, it's not vetted or anything, also has those downsides as well.
Yeah, but you did, I feel like I do remember the time when suddenly it was like, hey, and you wrote it like in the event description, it was like, hey, this is not a dating event, this is not what this is for. Because yeah, it was, I do remember there were a couple times where I was just like, oh boy.
Yeah,
this person definitely thought they were coming to something else. And we're all just like having a great conversation about something.
Yeah. I do think it helped once I put that in the description. But yeah, you never know who's going to read the description.
That is the truth. That is the truth. And even then, like some people will still come and they'll still try it. And you're just like,
ugh. Yeah.
Still here. You're still trying it. And A for effort. And also. Don't. Yeah. And what things have shifted, the pandemic's reasons and otherwise, we haven't been able to do a lot of the like discussion piece. And I think there's also been a shift in what's just happening in the world, what people are needing. And one of the things that I love that you've been able to keep doing is the newsletter, right? That monthly newsletter, I look forward to it. And it's literally like a newsletter that I'm like, it's here. I'm going to save it for the end of the day so that I can like really focus on it, because I want to see like all the cool things that are happening that people are doing. And yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were doing that even before, like with the discussion group. And I feel like that was like a really core piece of what you were doing for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. The newsletter has been a big part of Pleasure Pie since like since 2014. I put it on the little header recently, so I know, because I was like, established 2014, that sounds nice. Like cool now, that's one. But yeah, that was the same idea as the discussion group, or similar, where it's a very different type of offering, but just being like, okay, I had a hard time finding all this stuff and I want it to be easy for people. Like I want people to be able to be a part of this community if they want to be. And yeah, just making it's easy to be like, okay, obviously I miss things all the time that are happening and I'll just post them mostly on my Instagram story. Ah, another April event I missed, but that's great and nearby or online or whatever. But yeah, just being like, here's 30 things this month that you could go to and be a part of, mix of free things, expensive things, middle of the road things, and a mix of queer trans stuff and sex ed stuff that's like maybe geared toward professional sex educators or people who want to be, non-monogamous stuff, all the kinky stuff, like all different kind of flavors of sex positivity, feminist stuff. Yeah, my big goal with that is just to help people get involved and build up the local sex positive community, so the people organizing the events are getting more engagement and the people who want to be going to those kinds of things and want to be like having those kinds of community experiences or learning experiences are easily able to do that.
Yeah, and it does a great job, honestly. Do you find that things have changed since the pandemic? Like, as far as the maybe the kind of listings or the amount of listings?
Yeah, one thing, for when the pandemic started, we transitioned to only having online events. Obviously, most people just weren't going to things in person unless they really had to. But so for at least a few months, it was just all virtual events. And then after that, since then, it's been a mix of virtual events and in-person local to the Boston area. But that's been awesome because, like, it used to be that there were so many events that I would find online and it'd be like, oh, this is in Philadelphia. So obviously I can't list it, but it looks so cool. I wish that we had something like this happening in Boston that I could put in the newsletter. It was something that happened like every month. And now so many more of those things are available to join virtually. And that's just been really cool, that level of accessibility, like regardless of location. Yeah. And it also allows us, because I'm not the only one who works on it now, to be like, to pick and choose more. What events are we going to include? And have, like, there are definitely times with the newsletter before including a virtual events where I was like, the large majority of these events are hosted by white people. And that's like what I'm finding. And I'm making an effort to find more diverse events, but that's what I'm finding. And so that's what I'm putting in the newsletter. But having virtual events, there's just so much to choose from. And so being able to like spotlight more Black and Brown sex educators or like people doing this kind of work, community organizers and stuff, like, has been a big highlight of the pandemic for the newsletter.
Yeah. Do you think that, and this is definitely, you don't have to have an answer to this, but I do wonder sometimes about, okay, we know that this is what has happened in the past three-ish years. And it, like, there was a nice big boom of all of these virtual events. And I feel like there was a larger sort of community that ends up being built from it because of the access to other people in places that we wouldn't have to if it was all local and in person. Do you think that, like, this is how it's going to be for a while, that there will continue to be this mix? Or do you think that everyone's going to just suddenly be like, fuck it, I don't want to do anything virtual anymore, like, back to in person, mask off, clothes off, just go crazy?
I don't know what to expect of people. I don't know what's going to happen. I guess I know that, like, from people I know personally, a lot of people are having anxiety about returning to normal, and it feels weird after all this time. And after, I guess, just like COVID stuff is always changing, so is the current science 100% what's going on, or is there a risk we don't understand or whatever? I feel like people don't necessarily, people sometimes choose to just be cautious even when it seems like it might be safe. And also, obviously, people who are immunocompromised are probably wanting to take those virtual things up more. Yeah, so I think just seeing like that the organizers, many of them have learned how to do virtual events well and are comfortable with that now. There are a lot of hybrid events seeing, and still a lot of virtual events. So what I'm seeing right now is that there's still a lot of virtual offerings, and who knows? I know for me personally, I miss in-person events and I'm mostly like prioritizing doing things in person now. But if there's something like that's really unique to my interests that I see happening online, then I'll be there.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I don't actually expect you to have an answer for everyone else's choices. But it was just something, especially in this current time that we're in, where like a lot is opening up and spring and summer and outdoor weather and all this stuff, it's just so interesting to think about. Okay, 2 years ago, none of us would have thought our lives were going to be like this. And in 2 years, who even knows what our life is going to look like from here, from this specific point in time.
Yeah, I have no idea. I actually started asking friends, like just random friends, one-on-one maybe like last month, I was like, do you have an expectation of what's going to happen with the pandemic? Do you think that like it's going to keep, we're going to go into another lockdown? Do you think we're going to like transition away from using masks? Do you think we'll use masks for many years on a regular basis? Just what are people expecting? Because I was just like looking at my own brain and being like, I have no idea what's coming. I wonder what obviously like nobody knows, but I think a lot of my friends are smart, informed people. And so I was like, I'm really curious. What do you think?
Yeah, that would be really interesting to have all of that for people to see. Because I'm sure it varies quite a bit. So one of the things that I love about your zines and about the work that you do, right, is that you don't shy away from like real topics, first of all, right? Because sex is a very real topic. And it can also be very charged. And once in a while, I'll hear people within the sexuality industry. And I'm like, okay, a little bit curious where you come up with that. But they'll say things like, oh, I don't want to get political, or I'm not trying to get political. And I have my own opinions about that. But do you think it's possible as a sex educator, as an artist, to separate politics from sex and politics from art?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really understand why people say that, first of all. I don't know if it's just like trying to avoid arguments or something, but like my feeling around that is, first of all, as a sex educator, like what topics are you covering and how are you covering them? That is super politically charged. Are you talking about abortion at all? Because if you talk about abortion at all, that if you talk about abortion as a valid option at all, that is a clear political move. And if you choose to talk about it, to either not mention abortion as something that even exists, or to talk about abortion as like a really awful thing that sometimes people do that no one should ever do, like that is also a really clear political stance. And you could be somewhere in the middle, but like whatever you say shows your political stance on something. And the same goes for, are you talking about queer stuff? Are you talking about trans stuff? Are you completely leaving that out? Are you saying those things are bad? And yeah, all sorts of things. Like, how are you talking about bodies? How are you talking about like body size and diversity of bodies? And then in art, like, in my mind, like the content of art is like a little bit less clear to like understand that way. But thinking about if you are someone who is running an art gallery and like what artists are you including? If you're teaching about art history, what artists are you like revering as the ones that we should know about? Are they mostly like white men, or are you including all different kinds of people? And also, are you charging for your art events? How much are you charging? Are you like making scholarship options or different payment options, sliding scale? Or are you just like assuming that people can all afford a $30 ticket to your thing? Yeah, all those kinds of questions. And I feel like so many more, like it really, I don't think that just so many things are political because they're like hotly debated in politics. It's hard to, you just can't really talk about or do those things without somehow taking a stance.
Yeah, I have to say, I totally agree. And what I think that people try to do is they try to do this like separation thing, where it's, this is just this thing over here, and it isn't affected by anything else. Like, I sometimes feel like people choose to argue in that way, or choose to like think in that way, because they think, they'd like to think that things are existing in like a vacuum. You know what I mean? And it's no, it's, unless you actually live in a vacuum, I don't know many people who do, you know, then I think it's really hard to separate a lot of like our identities, like our daily experiences, like everything. What the weather is like. There's so much that I think can affect like how we are, who we talk to, how we react to things, that it's hard to just pretend like this thing is just happening, or this conversation is just happening because of no other reason.
Yeah, I honestly am confused, like, about when people say that. I don't understand.
Yeah. I'm always like, I get a little side eye at them, because it is, okay, I see where you're going with this. And I don't think I agree. Now, one of your more recent projects that I feel like can still be a topic that people get all kinds of feelings about is your recent work about period sex, right? You have a zine. Oh my gosh. Like, I didn't think about this, but I should have had literally all of your zines here. They're just over there in a bookshelf, but I should have had them here. So I could be like, all of your zines. It's okay. We're going to do this again in the future and I'll be more prepared. You have a period sex zine, and you recently had an event that featured other artists who did like art around their period sex with all of that stuff. What made you decide to focus on that topic?
Let's take a quick break. Check in with your body. What do you need? Do you need to stretch? Do you need to use the restroom? Do you need some extra water? Do whatever you need to take care of you, and we'll be right back.
Kumusta? My name is Antoinette, and I am honored to be working with Goddess Cecilia in producing the Raw Bar Season 1 and 2. I hope that you are enjoying it so far. If you're looking for a podcast support so you can focus on your liberation work, and if you are a Black, Indigenous, and a person of color, then I will be more than happy to be a part of your podcasting journey. I am a proud Filipina immigrant based in France, producing exclusively for BIPOC podcasters to amplify melanated voices, because you all know we all need to be heard. And I am here to ensure that the production and listening experience will be easeful and joyful for you and your listeners. Head on to unapologeticamplified.com for more details. See you soon.
Yeah, so that was, honestly, I think the reason that it came up for me, it was a couple of years ago that I started making that zine. And the reason it came up for me was, for the first, like, probably like 10 years that I was having sex with other people, nobody said anything about me having sex with them on my period. Mm-hmm. Everybody was just like, yeah, and it was just fine. And that to me was normal. And like, and especially like, for me personally, just the way my hormones affect my body, I tend to want sex more when I'm on my period. So I've had lots of sex on my period, and it always was just like, in my mind, it's, yeah, sex is always messy. This is just like more brightly colored and more like potential for stain, but it's not like a deal breaker. Like, I'll put down a towel. But then a couple of years ago, for the first time, somebody refused sex with me because I was on my period. And I was like, oh, that's something that happened. And it just got me thinking more about it. And that's happened to me probably a handful of times since then. And yeah, I don't know why that change happened, but whether it was like who I was choosing to sleep, I don't think it was a trend in who I was choosing to sleep with, because I slept with all sorts of different people when I was younger too. But yeah, like, it just, for whatever reason, happened that way. And it just got me thinking more and more about like, how do people think about period sex, and why does it bother people, and what are the maybe like stigmas around that, and where are they coming from? One thing that I found so interesting when I was making that zine was, I was just looking up, like, I knew as a former evangelical Christian that the Bible says don't have sex with a woman when she's on her period. And I was just like, yeah.
I feel like I should have known that, because I've also read the entire Bible, but also that was in high school.
Yeah. So a while ago. It's okay for you to forget some parts of the Bible. It's a long book.
It's pretty big. Yeah.
But yeah, I was like wondering, is this just Christianity, or are other major world religions saying the same thing? And I found that all the major world religions in their holy texts say, don't have sex with someone when they're menstruating. All of them. And I was really just, I looked up like, what are the percentage of people that subscribe to this religion? And like all the ones that were like any significant chunk of the pie, I was like, looked up, like, what does their text say? And it's, and all of them said that. And I was like,
wow.
Like, if there's one thing that all religions can agree on, apparently, that it's that period sex is bad.
And interesting so, choice.
Yeah. I like thought it was really funny. And because I was like, I feel like a lot of these religions are not agreeing on as much, that much stuff. It's
just like, you're like, all right, everybody, we're going to have some peace talks here. This is what we're going to talk about. You agree, you both agree, then you shouldn't be having sex while someone is on their period. Yeah. Now, there is world peace.
Yeah, they're all like, that's disgusting. Obviously.
Right. And they shake hands, and it's a party.
Yeah, so that was amazing to me, and just looking at, like, different, like, ways that sexism can play into, and also exploring, like, all different topics related to period sex. Like, I went into a lot about what kinds of menstrual products might you use if you're having penetrative sex during menstruation, and also, like, period sex as a fetish, and period sex for people who are trans and don't identify as women or maybe feminine, and just like thinking about the ways that we're talking about menstruation at all to be more inclusive. Yeah, I had a lot of fun making that scene.
It was wonderful. It really was.
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, yeah, it was a little bit of a like, why did you decide to do that? Did you, because I know you can, I feel like you made it public. Hey, like, everyone, if you want to submit something to the zine, submit to the zine if you wanted to. Did you get any pushback from anyone about the making of, or since it's been published?
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, especially since we now know that every major religion in the world is anti-period sex.
I bet I got some random Instagram comments, but I just get bullshit on there all the time. So I just delete it and don't respond and, yeah, don't bother. So I don't remember anything that was memorable, though, that people said about that scene. I feel like for the most part, it's like some people are, I've definitely had people like be like, oh, I'm on birth control and I don't get my period, or I had a hysterectomy or whatever, and just that's not a thing. I'm not interested in that scene. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But that's like, that's the main feedback that I remember that's not been like, oh, this scene is helpful. Thanks.
And obviously, like, for those who are watching this later or listening to this later, like, obviously we're not saying, or who are listening now, we're obviously not saying everybody should be doing it. That's not what we're saying, but there is this, there's like a major reaction to the concept of it that I feel like is worth exploring. Because like you just said earlier that like sex is already messy as it is. And now there's just like extra color. A little more nutrients in this one. Yeah. So yeah, like obviously no one has to. It's just like, why the extreme opposition in a way when people are like really anti, like why be anti about it? Just don't do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't at all mean to talk about it in a way that's like people should be all open to this and having all the kinds of sex that I'm going to talk about in my zines, because obviously, it's not. You should do what feels right for you and your body.
Exactly. I feel like you've done several zines of that, or several zines and several events that I feel like to so many people, because we don't talk about it very often, can like cause some alarm. And I actually didn't list this in your questions, but I realized I wanted to ask you about this. But if I remember correctly, you held an event. I believe it was the event, the making out one, but it was all about consent, and that there were people who were like really fucking pissed that you were hosting this event. And I was like, oh my God, why didn't they list that as one of the questions? Because we have to talk about that. Because that was like, first of all, I'm going to let you talk about what the event was and then what ended up happening. I think did I attend that event? I'm pretty sure I did.
I probably
remember being there anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. That's probably the thing that I've done as Pleasure Pie that has gotten the most pushback ever. I got so much shit about that event. It really affected me and like my approach to Pleasure Pie, because it was really like just from a couple of like very vocal people that knew each other, and they were actually feminist organizers in Boston. So I took their reaction to heart because I was like, oh, I expected that we would be more on the same page. And it was, so the event was called A Consent, A Sexy Makeup Party. And at that time, I had never heard critiques of using the phrase consent is sexy because people sometimes take that as to mean consent isn't serious, like a serious issue, or that it should always wind up being sexy. Because obviously if it's a no, like it might not wind up being all that sexy. And like consent is just like necessary. And that is how a lot of people feel about that phrase, which I now understand. But at the time I was like, I liked that phrase as a way of being like, basically talking about consent doesn't have to ruin the mood. And my concept for that party was I really wanted to have a space where consent communication could be put into practice, because I still feel like a lot, like you just might have a lot more opportunity to talk about these things in public ways that are outside of the bedroom, and not as much opportunity with like instruction and support to really practice them. And once you get there in person, like in the moment, it can be really hard to take those skills and translate them to actually doing the thing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just bring people together in this like consent oriented sex positive space and literally practice being like, do you want to make out? No. Yes. And I even required, obviously I didn't like kick people out if they didn't do this, but I like told everybody you have to say no at least once, just because saying no can be really uncomfortable and receiving a no can also be hard. So I wanted people to practice those skills. And the way that the makeout party went was we had a discussion at the beginning, but it lasted for like at least 2 hours. It was really long. And we were just going into like people's consent questions, and people had lots of great questions. But yeah, then finally went to the makeout part, which there was some making out, but a lot of people were too shy. And the event, that was it. I never heard from anyone that they had any experience of the event. It was actually, I should have clarified this earlier, the feedback that I got was from people before the event even happened, and it was based on the event description. It was not actually based on the event itself, because they didn't go to the event. But yeah, it was like getting that feedback, like they were saying that I was putting people at risk by putting people in this space that had this more intimate nature, and that I should have vetted the event, but which I didn't. And yeah, now looking back on it, I feel like the approach that they took to expressing those things was like, not that my feelings are the most important thing here, I found hurtful, but also looking back, like I think that they had some good points. I don't necessarily agree with everything that those people said to me, because they wrote like a whole long thing with a lot of stuff in it. But yeah, especially like after having experiences where I had a stalker kind of situation or people showing up for the wrong reasons, that didn't happen at that event, but it could have, and I wouldn't plan something like that again without having a vetting process.
Yeah, it was definitely the first thing of its kind in Massachusetts, at least. And I think that, yeah, like for the newness of it, the newness of the concept too, there was so much room to modify things or get feedback. But I do remember it being very like, this is my opinion of it, like I do remember it being like very sudden, and it was clear. At least this is what I assumed, that they didn't really get in contact with you, that they just decided that they were going to talk about this without talking to you as the organizer. And I feel like it was also like, that's just what people were doing at the time. That was just like, that's just what we did. That's just, we just wrote giant articles about it and never actually had a conversation with the organizers.
Yeah, I think that my main like feeling, it felt like just this like infighting within like the feminist movement of like just being I don't know, like very much like you have to approach everything exactly the way that I do or else like you're problematic and should get canceled. And that was definitely the first time I experienced something like that. And yeah, it really, I actually took a break from working on Pleasure Pie for I think 3 months after that happened because like I was so shaken up by the experience and just had no, it was just so unexpected for me that like people would think that what I was doing was harmful in that way. I expected that maybe like conservatives would think that it was like wrong in ways that I just disagreed with and wasn't worried about. But yeah, I basically just stepped down and was like, maybe I'm not in a place where I know what I'm doing enough to be like leading this kind of work, and took some time away. And then eventually came back to Pleasure Pie with the take that like, I was like, well, I'm trying to learn from this experience and find whatever truth there is in this person's, like, these people's critique. And also, I don't just suddenly know all the answers and like know that I'm going to do everything perfectly. And, but I am really passionate about sex positivity and consent. And I think it would be a shame for me to not try to do work in that realm because of like fear of being imperfect.
God, that is such a great statement right there.
Thank you.
Okay, so what do you think? What do you think is something about sex positivity, pleasure, that most people are like not ready to hear, but you're like, it's time. It's time we lay this all out on the table for people to revel in.
I know that lots of people are disagree with me on this, but, and this is definitely like a heavier answer. So just a heads up, I maybe could have given a heads up earlier when talking about sexual assault stuff now that I think of it. But anyway,
I'll put a little disclaimer. Don't worry.
Oh, great. Okay.
In the description.
That's, but yeah, my thing that I think of with that question is the fact that so many men and boys experience like sexual assault, sexual abuse, sexual trauma. And in my experience with the sex positive movement and sex education movement and feminism, I find that the conversations around like sexual assault just so much don't center around that or even make very much space for those experiences, which are super common. Like that stuff happens a lot to a lot of people. And so I find it really important to include men and boys in, I'm not, my work doesn't reach boys, I'm not working with children, but men in the ways that I talk about, like sexual healing, sexual trauma, sex positivity in general, because that to me is a big part of sexual healing. And I get frustrated with like the ways that people talk about men are trash or like male tears, because I'm like, I think that there's a lot, I obviously get that there's a lot of sexism and a lot of men are perpetrating violence and also just being like really oblivious about their privilege and not help. But like, I also find it really important to, so many men are hurting and trying to heal from their own experiences and or just trying to figure out how to be like men that aren't being assholes. And I feel like a lot of men are genuinely trying and need support. So yeah, I'm like anti-men are trash.
Ooh, that is quite a statement. I do have to admit though that having a partner who is a cis man and having a child who, as far as we know right now, is a cis boy, as far as we know, until he understands more like what gender and what like self-expression really is. No, I know in some of the conversations that I've had with my partner, it has been a lot of like, I'll be angry about something and I'll look at him. These are the people that you have to like deal with. Like, you have to deal with these people. And he's just, I have no clue how. I have no idea how to do that. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. I don't know how I'm supposed to do it. And I'm like, I know you don't. And I don't have the answers either. And also, yeah, like not having the language and not being told your whole life that you could or that you're supposed to, and that it doesn't like make you less of a certain whatever is definitely a thing. And then trying to raise a little human to not be a shitty human is so hard. And also toddlers are just, they're little tornadoes. And so that's just a whole thing all in and of itself. And also, like, knowing, and I've looked at my partner and I've looked at my child, and I'm like, I know that my child is like half Filipino and he's also half white. And that is a part of who he is that he's going to have to figure out, like, what that means. Oh, my hope is that he does something good with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that while it is a very controversial opinion, like, it's an important thing to put out there. Okay, yes. Yeah, there's a lot that ends up missing, I think, on all the sides. Okay, last question, Nicole. What are you currently finding pleasure in at this moment?
Oh, that's such a nice question. I am going to say just, like, connecting. It's so nice to connect with you and to be able to talk about this stuff. Like, I'm with somebody that I've known for a long time and that I know that this is your bread and butter too. And I feel like maybe I haven't had as much like sex educator community since the beginning of the pandemic. And it's so nice. Makes me want to go to a conference.
Every year I've been like, are they going to do something? Is Partners in Sex Ed going to do something?
I know. I want that.
I'm going to put that in Megara's year.
Yeah. Please do. What about you? What are you finding pleasure in this month?
Oh my gosh. Right now, I am finding pleasure in I recently decided that I'm going to try houseplants. I've never been, like, my mom is a gardener by profession, and I've just always had not a green thumb. And so I have a bunch of houseplants now. Not a lot. I'm still new on it. I downloaded an app to help me because otherwise I'd forget about them. Like, I love being able to see some of the greenery. Like, it's making me happy.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And also, like, it's funny that you don't have a green thumb because you're generally so green.
It's the funniest thing. People think, like, oh yeah, she must be so good. And I'm like, nope.
That's true. Oh, happy for you and your plants, and my fingers are crossed for their well-being.
Thanks.
I know what it's like to not be good at plants, and I am also trying and having some successes and plenty of failures.
Yeah. The apps will do it. They did it for me.
Okay, that's great. One thing that somebody told me about plants that who has tons of plants that I found really affirming was like, sometimes, like, some plants are just going to die, and that's okay. Like, just sometimes they die, especially if they're small. When you get them, they don't always make it. And that's not even necessarily on you. Like, sometimes they just aren't made for this world.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of nice. Yeah, that is kind of nice to think about. It. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a normal thing. If you plant, like, 20 seeds, like, not 20 plants are going to grow. And I just think of it like that. If you have 20 plants, not 20 plants are going to survive for the next 5 years.
That's a good point. I love that perspective. All right, Nicole, thank you for joining us. Oh, repeat again, like, how people can find you.
Oh, yeah. So I'm most active on Instagram. It's PleasurePie on Instagram. And also I have a website, PleasurePie.org, and a little bit on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter is also PleasurePie. Facebook is Facebook.com/PleasePie without the E at the end of please. But yeah, mostly just follow us on Instagram. Oh, and if you are local to the Boston area, I highly recommend signing up for Boston Sex Positive Newsletter, which you can do at PleasurePie.org.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Nicole.
Thank you.
Well, friends, it's time to go our separate ways. I hope you're feeling as satiated and stimulated from today's podcast as I am. Make sure you rate and review today's episode on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Lastly, head over to rawbarpod.com. That's rawbarpod.com. pod.com to find out how you can connect with my guests and me and how you can be a part of the Raw Bar Regulars. See you next time.